I quickly announced a private dinner with Dr. Hulin and myself. I thought 5 or 6 people might show up. Instead, almost 100 people showed interest, and 75 people paid for a nice dinner to reserve their spot at the table. Dr. Hulin surprised me by asking for a list of everyone who would attend the event. He wanted to clean on them. I wasn't sure what that meant, but I sent him the list. He wrote back saying,
"Thank you for the list, Akua. It is only about cleansing, the chance to get clear of stuff and to be clear with God. Quotes from Shakespeare, "Then soul, live upon thy servant's loss, and let that pine to aggravate thy store, by terms divine in selling hours of dross, within be fed, without be rich no more. So shall thy feed on death that feeds on men, and death, once dead, there's no more dying then." End of quote. Peace be with you. E. Haleakala.
When Dr. Hulin arrived in Austin and I picked him up, he immediately started asking me questions about my life. The book you wrote about your life, referring to the book Adventures Within, shows you did a wide variety of things to find peace. Which one really works? I thought about it and said they all had value, but maybe the option process was the most useful and reliable. I explained it's a way to question beliefs to find out what is real. "When you question beliefs, what are you left with?" Dr. Hulin asked me. "What are you left with?" I repeated. "You're left with a clarity about choice." "Where's that clarity coming from?" I wasn't sure what he was getting at. "Why can a person be wealthy and still an ass?" he suddenly asked me. I was taken by surprise with the question. I wanted to explain that wealth and ass aren't exclusive. There's nothing written that says only angels are wealthy. Maybe the obnoxious person is clear about money so he can be wealthy and still be a cuss. But I couldn't find the words in the moment. "I have no idea," I confessed. "I don't think you have to change your personality to be wealthy. You just have to have beliefs that accept wealth." "Where do those beliefs come from?" Dr. Hulin asked me. Having been in his training, I knew enough to answer with, "They are programs people pick up from living." He again changed the subject by saying, "I am truly a hypnotic writer." He was beginning to entertain the idea of a book by me about Ho'oponopono. "Are you ready for me to write the book now?" I asked. "Let's see how the weekend goes," he said. "Speaking of that, how are we doing this dinner?" I asked him. "I've always wanted to control the situation to be sure I do well and people get what they want." "I never plan," he said. "I trust divinity." "But are you going to speak first, or me, or what?" I wanted to know. "And do you have an introduction you want me to read for you?" "We'll see," he said. "Don't plan." This made me uncomfortable. I like to know what's expected of me. Dr. Hulin was pushing me into the darkness. Or maybe into the light. I wasn't sure at the time. He went on to say something more wise than I knew at that moment. What we humans are unaware of in our moment-to-moment existence is a constant, incessant resistance to life, he began. This resistance keeps us in a constant, incessant state of displacement from our self-identity and from freedom, inspiration, and above all, divine creator itself. Simply put, we are displaced people wandering aimlessly in the desert of our minds. We are unable to heed the precept of J.C., resist not. We are not aware of another precept. Peace begins with me. Resistance keeps us in a constant state of anxiety and spiritual, mental, physical, financial, and material impoverishment, he added. Unlike Shakespeare, we are unaware that we are in a constant state of resistance instead of flow. For each byte of consciousness, we experience at least 1 million bytes unconsciously, and the one byte is useless for our salvation. This was going to be one fascinating evening. Dr. Hulin asked to see the room where we would be holding the dinner. It was a huge ballroom on the top floor of a downtown Austin, Texas hotel. The manager was polite and let us in the room. Dr. Hulen asked if we could be alone in it. She agreed and left. "What do you notice?" he asked me. I looked around and said, "Well, the carpet needs to be cleaned." "What impressions do you get?" he asked. "There's no right or wrong. What you get may not be what I get." I allowed myself to relax and focus on the moment. Suddenly I sensed a lot of traffic, a weariness, a darkness. I wasn't sure what it was or what it meant, but I voiced it to Dr. Hulen. "The room is tired," he said. "People come in and out and never love it. It needs acknowledgement." I thought that was a little strange. A room is like a person. It has feelings. Well, whatever. "This room says its name is Sheila." Sheila? That's the room's name? "Sheila wants to know we appreciate her." I wasn't sure how to respond to that. "We need to ask permission to have our event here," he said. "So I'm asking Sheila if it is okay with her." "What is she saying?" I asked, feeling a little foolish asking the question. "She says it is okay." "Well, that's good," I replied, remembering that my deposit on the room was non-refundable. Dr. Hulen went on to explain, "I was in an auditorium once, getting ready to do a lecture, and I was talking to the chairs. I asked, 'Is there anybody I've missed? Does anyone have a problem that I need to take care of?' One of the chairs said, 'You know, there was a guy sitting on me today during a previous seminar who had financial problems, and now I just feel dead.' So I cleaned with that problem, and I could just see the chair straightening up. Then I heard, 'Okay, I'm ready to handle the next guy.'" Dr. Hulen's talking to chairs now? Somehow, I left my mind open to hear more about this unusual process of his. He went on to explain the following. "What I actually try to do is teach the room. I say to